Okay, everyone, welcome back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. I'm Dan Canerbio. He's the champ, Chris Algieri, and we're presented by PPV.com. March 28th, Sebastian Fundora puts his WBC title on the line against Keith One Time Thurman, and you can watch that live on PPV.com, live interactive chat where you can find me, Chris, and some other boxing luminaries. You can stream it to your phone, your tablet, anything. Big screen TV, no subscriptions. You go fight by fight. We had some good ones earlier this year, PPV.com. They also had like a grappling tournament last night that was actually off the rails that we'll talk about later on in this episode. They have AEW Wrestling and they have PBC Boxing. So it's going to be a very busy couple of months for PPV.com, our proud presenting sponsor. How are you, Chris? Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I'm good. Quick question. Off the rails, that's a positive thing? Like, off the hook, I know, off the chain, those are good. Off the rails, that's still good?
No, this is like off the rails as in like
crazy.
Fans were picked out of the crowd to fight head of security.
Oh, yeah.
There was a ring announcer came into the ring during a sanctioned fight and said, this fight sucks. I'm stopping it.
All right, so I understood what off the rails meant. I thought I misunderstood that there's
hype,
a new meaning.
Hype FC, I want to say it was. Hype FC in Brazil with our guy Corey Erdman on the call.
Oh, like,
this is the ultimate tease. This is the ultimate tease because I was planning to play it at the end of the show. Video.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry.
In radio, they call that a tease. You know, like, hey, when we come back from the commercial break, we'll have more on this. You're listening to Inside Boxing.
Did I say
Inside Boxing Live at the beginning of the show?
I don't know.
There's a good chance I did.
More than likely, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ariel. Ariel Helwani has been on my case.
Head on the chopping block.
He's been shaming me in the uncrowned Slack channel in front of everyone. It's like, you know, when you talk to something
wrong. There's a good chance in the next couple of weeks I'm going to be a solo act. Dan's going to get axed.
Inside Boxing. You are watching and listening to Inside Boxing. I swear it's muscle memory. It's legitimately, Ariel doesn't want to hear it, but it's 10 years of saying Inside Boxing Live. I even put a sign above the camera, a sticky note, Inside Boxing with exclamation points.
So doesn't help.
All right, anyway.
All right, let's talk boxing.
Yeah, let's talk boxing. That's a good point, Chris, because we have been talking a lot of litigation on this
I'm over
podcast.
It. I'm tired of it.
Tired of it. We've been talking a lot of
fights that aren't happening.
Nonsense. Fights that aren't happening. We've been talking about legislation. We've been talking about marination. It's time to talk about fights that are happening. Fights that are on the schedule. I made a promise to our listeners and to you. We're not talking about that on this episode. It's not happening today.
Thank God.
So
I'm over.
We're talking about fights that are happening. And there are a lot of big fights that are happening, Chris. Some really good ones.
Yeah, and as much as we are complaining about all the nonsense that is around boxing, boxing's having a pretty good year. We've had a really good start. We've had some good fights happen. We had some good fights lined up. You know, this has been a really good first quarter for boxing and boxing fans and for us. It's unfortunate that gets drowned out a little bit with all the nonsense that surrounds our sport and all the drama and the clickbaity nature of the current era that we live in. But at the end of the day, if you peel that all away, boxing's having a good year, and we've got a lot of good fights to talk about and have been talking about some good fights, got to watch some good fights. But yeah, we got a bunch coming up. How do you want to get into these, Dan?
So I wanted to put together top five fights that we're most looking forward to. I'll give you my five. We'll talk about them, and then whatever you're missing from the list, you can jump in with yours. Does that make sense?
Copy.
Yeah. So yeah, it has been a great year so far, and these are fights that are on the schedule. I know you're number one. You might have to change your number one. Don't say it yet. Or you're number five. Don't say it yet. But these are on the schedule, ready to go. Fight posters, tickets are on sale. We're ready to go. Starting off with number five, I have Caroline Dubois versus Terry Harper, April 5th on Sky Sports. I want to get the ladies represented on this list. It is a unification bout. WBC, WBO, ring belt on the line. Dubois has some belts. Harper has some belts at 135. Dubois is the ring number one ranked fighter at 135. Harper is number three. Dubois is the up-and-coming future star of women's boxing. Harper, at age 29, has been in some big fights already with Alicia Bumgarner, comes to mind. She also fought Sandy Ryan, and she also fought, Bumgarner. So her only two losses are Bumgarner and Sandy Ryan. I think Dubois is on a crash course with Alicia Bumgarner, as much as Bumgarner doesn't want to say it. I interviewed Bumgarner at the ESPNW rollout last week at MSG, and she's like, I don't want to talk about Caroline Dubois. I want to fight Amanda Serrano. So there's a lot going on with women's boxing right now, especially with MVP. I think this is going to be a really interesting fight. I have it at number 5 on my list.
Nice. Yeah, I like both these fighters. I like Dubois a lot. I think I see what you see in her. I think she's streaking. I think she's very, very good. And I think she's going to be one of the best female fighters in the world, if she's not already considered that. And Harper...
She's not on the top 10 list, dude.
She's not, or she is?
She's on the rings pound for pound, which I think is an admission.
Yeah. I think, you know, I think she is at that level, and I think she's going to get even better. And Harper is solid, man. She's been around up and down the weight classes. She's gone from 130 to 54, back down to 40. She's been all over, but very, very capable. Should be a good fight. Wasn't my number 5. My number 5, I had to switch because of the rules. The rules are fights that are set. Because I was going to say Ortiz and Ennis, but the fight's not set. And likely, probably isn't going to happen.
Said no marination, no legislation,
no litigation. I was pipe dreaming on that one. So that one's not number 5. So my number 5 is going to be Fundora and Thurman. I'm sorry. Spence and Zhu. Spence and Zhu, I'm actually really looking forward to. Throw a little curve there.
Is that one signed, though?
Yes. Good question.
Is there a wink-wink agreement?
So I interviewed Tim yesterday, and we spoke about the fight. And essentially, he's taking a fight in between. He's fighting soon over in Australia. He's fighting a 20-0 guy, but kind of a nondescript European guy who no one's really heard of. Albanian out of Italy. But yeah, no, that fight is as close to done as can be. Even Paulie, I broke the news on this like a month and a half ago when he was working in Australia. He had mentioned that they're really working on Spence and Zhu. And as far as I know, it's a done deal in terms of when it's going to be. They're looking at late summer, early fall for the return of Errol Spence.
Interesting. Like it.
I like a fight, too.
The one thing we know about PBC is when they got a plan, they see stick it through. To that plan.
Yep.
They see it through. Fundora Thurman has been on the schedule for, I feel like, 5 years now.
It's literally been like 3 years.
Legit, it's been a long time, and we're getting that in 2 weeks, even though, did you see Richard Torres versus Sanchez got postponed? I'm really upset about that.
Oh, I didn't see that. I was really interested in that fight. That's a good fight. Is somebody hurt?
Well, they say it's going to be moved to the May 30th card, which could potentially be Devin Haney and Rolly Romero, but it turns out that Frank Sanchez's knee, which he had surgery on, is not healing properly. And I'm like, okay, is that gonna like magically heal better in the next 6 weeks?
Yeah, when there's injuries and they push fights back like a little bit, I'm like, you're either lying about the injury or you're really overestimating, you know, how good the recovery is going to be. Because hand injuries are another one. When guys have hand injuries, I'm like, road to recovery from hand surgery is a bumpy one. It is not a straight line. So it always makes me concerned when guys have a fight that gets pushed back just slightly. That makes me feel like it's not a real injury and they're just using an excuse for something else, which can tell you a lot.
Yeah, so apparently the Spence Zhu fight will be this summer, and it will be over in Australia, which is a little puzzling to me because I thought for sure Errol Spence would come back and fight here in the States, Texas. He's like a ticket seller. I mean, even if he hasn't fought in 2 years, the guy has a fan base, and he's a known commodity. So maybe we get Spence later on in the year, but I like that fight. It's a loser kind of goes home type of fight. They're not losers, they're winners, but it's that type of fight. It's like a last stand buffet.
Good fight. This would be higher up on my list, but because there's a fight in between, I'm a little, just in case, because watch, you know, if Zhu loses this next fight, we're not seeing the Spence fight for him.
And he very well could.
Yeah, he's fighting a 20-0 guy. Guy doesn't know what to lose. So
is it like a Brock Jarvis guy coming up from 130?
No, but he has had very nondescript competition up until now. You know, hasn't had a lot of long duration fights. 20-0, 9 KOs, not a big puncher. Paulie knew of him because he fights out of Italy. He's an Albanian guy who fights out of Italy. But
speaking of Italy, have you been following? I know you don't watch baseball like that, but have you been following the Italy baseball team in the World Baseball Classic?
No.
Bro, so obviously the World Baseball Classic is like the World Cup of baseball. It's going off right now. Italy beat USA in a massive upset earlier in the week. But the coolest thing is none of two guys are actually from Italy on the team. The rest are just Italian American guys from like New Jersey. They're led by a guy named Vinny Pasquantino, who's the first baseman for the Royals, who's just like a regular guy that we went to high school with.
Vinny Pass. Come on. I know Vinny
Pass. Vinny Pass from freaking Jersey. That guy's a legend. But
he makes hoagies on the weekends.
The coolest thing of it all is they have a celebration that after they hit a home run, they put an Armani blazer on in the dugout. They go to an espresso machine. They take a shot of espresso, two kisses on the cheek.
This is ridiculous.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it yet.
That's hilarious. The real Italians must be like, oh, Maradona.
There's two Italians on the team. There's actually two guys from Italy on the team. The rest are all guys from New York that have like either Italian grandmothers or Italian parents. But the best part, Chris, is last night they beat Mexico. They blew them out. Pasquantino hit three homers, and he took three shots of espresso. They interviewed him after the game. He goes, I'm beaned up right now. I'm caffeinated.
Beaned up. Wow. I love this. I gotta catch up on this after our show today.
Yeah, I'll send you a bunch of the memes. It's phenomenal. I'm glad that we could fix that in. So we got an Italian fighter fighting Zoo out of Albania. So Italy's up right now. Up right now.
Italy's way up.
I'm gonna go to my number four on this list. Don't tell me yours because I feel like we might start interchanging the same ones. So I'll hit four. We'll talk about it. I'll hit the rest, and then you can chime in with some of yours.
Okay.
Number four on PPV.com, March 28th, Sebastian Fundora versus Keith Thurman. Really like this fight. It's becoming more and more intriguing to me as we get closer and closer. Fundora's had this belt for a while. Thurman, his one last stand, the wily vet versus the guy who we think could be one of the men at 154.
Yeah, and this fight's creeping up. Like, it's really close. It's right around the corner. Would like to see it marketed more. You got a guy like Keith Thurman who's got a good mouthpiece and talks up a good fight and can market himself really well. And I don't feel like they're utilizing him quite enough. So Fundora's not. He's not a mouth. He's not a talker. He's a fighter. So maybe that's why. But I think you would lean more heavily on Keith to kind of sell this fight. But not a whole lot of that going on. But regardless, it's a good fight because both guys are super intriguing. Fundora is always intriguing because he's 6'7", 154 pounder. And like you said, he may be the guy to beat at 154 right now and kind of has been in that placeholder for a little bit. And Keith Thurman is just a guy that on his best, we know how damn good he can be. Obviously, he's past his prime in terms of his age and staying busy and, you know, injuries and whatnot. But man, he might still got it. You don't know. He might still got it. You see him on the bag throwing those overhand rights against a taller opponent. You see him whipping in those shots. I don't know. I don't think it would be that crazy to see Keith Thurman go back to the well one more time in this fight.
That's what I mean. It's like we're all counting out Keith because he's on the north side of 35. He hasn't been in there. He hasn't just been consistent.
And it's also Fundora. It's not like, you know, it's not just because Keith is older.
Fundora is vulnerable, man. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Even in the Zoo fights, both Zoo fights.
Got cracked.
He was getting cracked. He just gets cracked in fights. It's just the type of fighter that he is. That's why he's so fun to watch. It's that he has defensive lapses. He doesn't just stay on the outside and jab, despite having the most ridiculous reach and the length. He likes to bang in the middle of the ring. He likes to mix it up. And I'm very curious. Think about Thurman, too, at this stage in his career. He's always been like this throughout his career. He's like a thinking man in there. Early on, he was very athletic in his career, and he was able to, you know, get away with a lot of different things, but also just depend on athleticism to go with thinking. Obviously, now the athleticism is starting to wane, and now we're seeing more intelligence that he's going to have to use inside the ring against Fundora. That part intrigues me. But if you look at Fundora, like, I think the jury is kind of still out on him because of the way that he fights. The wins over Zoo, you can kind of pick them apart because we've seen what Zoo has become. Chardale Booker, Brian Mendoza, he gets dropped and he loses. Erickson Lubin fight was going on 4 years ago, and that was a bloody affair where he got cracked plenty of times. You know, it's safe to say that it's like Tim Zoo Thurman, one of the best fighters that Fundora's ever fought.
Yeah, no question. I think this is the best fighter he's fought. Granted, you know, the age is a bit of an issue and the weight class. But in terms of track record, no, there's no one even close. So this is a big fight. It's a winnable fight for Thurman. He's going to be an underdog, no question. But yeah, I know I kept saying like Fandora might be the guy at 154, but 154 is deep, really deep. And if you got a guy like Brian Mendoza knocking you out, there's a lot tougher guys out there than Brian Mendoza in this weight class. So Fandora is standing on the top of the heap, but he's basically standing on toothpicks at this point. He could be knocked over.
Was that a joke about his legs?
A little bit of a little punny, but not entirely.
He has been timber against the Mendoza. That was legit timber.
Yeah, not a good look. And it's hard to get that out of your mind, seeing him get knocked out like that.
Well, that's if Thurman's going to do it, that's how it's going to happen.
Yes.
Like you said, that right hand over the top. And I say this story a lot because it was a pretty cool moment. Work in one of the PBC events, Fandora's Fighting Zoo. It was the Pacquiao card. And I'm up at the host position. Doing some stuff for PBC, and Thurman comes in, and Thurman's watching the Fandora fight, and he's watching closely,
mm-hmm.
and he's not talking.
Analyzing.
And Keith Thurman not talking is a weird thing, because he's just sitting there, while, he guy's always talking, and he's just watching it, and I'm like, yo, what are you thinking, man? Like, I had to ask him, I was like, what are you thinking? He's like, I could beat this guy. He goes, this might be the only fight where I kind of just throw one shot at a time,
mm-hmm.
and don't put combinations together, and I was like, damn, that's pretty interesting. So, we get that fight on March 28th on PPV.com, Fandora and Thurman. Third most fight I'm looking forward to, Fabio Wardley, Daniel Dubois, May 9th. It's going down on the zone. Big, meaty man throwing heat.
This is a shootout. Two guys with crippling power and who can be found. They can be found. Wardley gets hit. You know, he was getting outboxed, you know, against Hooney before he scored that one punch, beautiful knockout. You know, he was in a war with Parker before he stops him with a crazy, combination for half a round. And Dubois, obviously, we've seen Dubois down. We've seen Dubois out. We've seen Dubois get rocked and then knock Anthony Joshua out. Like, this is as close to Rock'em Sock'em Robots as you can get. Wardley is still a little rough around the edges. He's not as pristine as some of these other guys. He's a late start, but God, does he have God-gifted talent, athleticism, and power. And Dubois is one of the strongest guys in the division. He is a tank. Neither one of them know how to go backwards. I think we're going to have a really good fight for as long as it lasts, and I can't tell you who's going to win. Even better.
We don't have to tell you yet. We usually let you know on fight week. But with Wardley, I totally agree. Like, his inexperience makes him intriguing to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the fact that he did not have much of an amateur background, the fact that he finds a way to win these fights, he's down on the cards, he knocks you out late, got that Gotti-esque type of vibe to him where it's like, you don't know what's going to happen in these fights, they're must watch. I think that adds to his intrigue, and I really want to see if he can stop Dubois, who has shown time and time again that he can be that guy, and has shown time and time again that he could get knocked out. You don't know what you're going to get with Dubois either. So it's like a mystery type of fight. Like, we can't even pick a winner. And it's at heavyweight, where it's one of the most exciting divisions because one punch can change the whole course of the fight. And it's for a heavyweight title.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's got everything you want.
And it's sold out.
Rightfully so.
The Ring put out a thing that I heard they're having trouble selling tickets. Next thing you know, you look up, it's sold out. And it doesn't have Turkey involvement in it. This is a straight-up domestic dust-up that we've seen the likes of before Saudi Arabia got involved with that. Said we're not talking about that on this episode. That's all I got out of my system. Wardley Dubois, I have it at number 3. Banger. All right, we're getting into the...
Real quick on that one, I'm just looking up real quick. So between the two of these guys, we got 40 KOs.
Yikes.
Both of them have been the distance... One time.
Stop.
One time each. Fabio Wardley is 20-0-1 with 19 KOs. So I guess, the draw, he went the distance. But he's got 20 wins, 19 by KO. Daniel Dubois has 22 wins, 21 by KO. So we got two guys who can really punch.
So tick the under or
we're not hearing that final bell, bud.
The fight not to go the distance. They're probably going to set the under lower then. It's a 12 round fight. Usually I see the over under set like 10 and a half.
The under for this might be like 3.5.
Oh God. It's going to be such a good one on May 9th. Are we getting into the nitty gritty here? Number two, we're going to cruiserweights. When's the last time you were excited about a cruiserweight fight? But I am excited about this one. Benavidez Zurdo.
Yeah.
Banger.
Yep.
Absolute banger. Benavidez going up to his third weight class, taking on a guy that's been there for a while now in Zurdo Ramirez. I don't see how this can't be a really, really intriguing fight. Mexico versus Mexico in Las Vegas. Let's go, May 2nd.
Super intriguing. Also extremely important, the winner, you know, for what's next of the cruiserweight division. You know, Jaio Pitaya is looming. He's out there. Again, we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty of all the drama that's surrounding all this stuff. We're talking about fights. So talking about fights is you got to see the winner of this versus Opataya one day so we can get a true cruiserweight champion. Mexico versus Mexico. Two guys who are former 168-pound champions, by the way. Both of them. Both used to be super middleweight. Are now up fighting a cruiserweight. And I brought this point up the other day. Part of the reason that each of them has been so successful in these higher weight classes is because they were originally 68-pounders and they have very fast hands and they throw combinations. Both guys throw a lot of combinations. Both guys are fast-handed. It's really helped them against the bigger guys. Now they're fighting each other. So who's got the advantage now based on the hand speed and the combination punching and the overall volume and conditioning? So really intriguing in matchup. Two guys who are going to throw a lot of punches. Two guys who are, I think are vicious in the way they go about and the way they operate. So I really like this fight. I agree with you on this one. This was also my number two. Really, really intriguing fight. And it's one of those ones where I don't think they're going to stop punching from the opening bell until the fight's over. And I think we go the distance.
Did you see the face-off recently posted?
Zurdo is huge.
It's one of the first times I can remember where a Benavidez opponent was bigger than him.
Yeah, only time. I mean, Zurdo is that's a big man, and I've heard stories of him walking around the 220. He looked bigger than that. He might be even bigger than that. He's a heavyweight.
I watched him fight in person for the first time on the Jake Paul Julio Cesar Chavez card. He fought Dorticos, and that was in summer of last year. And he's interesting because his footwork is slow. Like, I was watching him, like, wow, he's a little bit more methodical than I recall. Obviously, at 168, and now he's fighting cruiserweight, so he's going to be a little bit slower with the footwork. But the hand speed was glaring. So it's interesting to watch a guy that has slower foot, like feet, but his hand speed is quick. That's like an interesting, you know, type of style.
Yeah, and it's because of what I said, him coming from 68, you know, obviously his body's bigger, so his feet aren't moving. He's not as mobile, but he's still got those fast hands. Fast hands are funny, Dan. Fast hands, you either got them or you don't. It's kind of like power. You either got fast hands or you don't. You can make them a little quicker, just like you can make yourself punch a little harder. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, it's a God-given thing. And he's got God-given fast hands, so he's brought that up with him. But in terms of his footwork, he did not bring up the mobility. He's gained a lot of weight. He's a much, much bigger guy. So the mobility is not going to be there, but the hand speed is. It still is.
That's why I think the mugger is going to be able to use his footwork.
Yes, he is much more mobile. Also, I'm curious to see David Benavidez not cutting as much weight, because even at 68, he cut a ton of weight. I think even at 75, he was cutting a good amount of weight. Now, he's coming in healthy with extra calories. I'm wondering how much that's going to affect him, because his gas tank has always been one of his best weapons, his ability, best abilities. He throws a lot of punches. He fights at a very fast clip. He lets his hands go in succession. Good fight.
I think he's going to overwhelm him. I think Benavidez should be able to pick up the W here, but it's not going to be easy. Because like I said, fighting a bigger guy, fighting a guy that's been at the weight for a while, fighting a guy with a lot of power, and it's not. I commend Benavidez, man. Just, I love how he's just putting his career into like his own hands. Obviously he wants the Canelo fight. He'll talk about it until the cows come home. But I'm not waiting. I'm not waiting for Canelo. I'm not waiting for Benavidez. Bivol. I'm not waiting for Better BF. I'm gonna go to May 2nd.
He's always been like that.
Right. But it's just great to see him continue to do that. Because how many times have we seen guys not, like, they say they're about that life. They get detoured. Money, promoters get in the way, management and all that, or just they take a different career route. This guy has said, he's been doing it for a while now, too. I mean, since he was 21, this guy was doing the damn thing. But the fact that he's now going to the May 2nd date and at a new weight class, fighting a top guy at the weight class, well, one of the top guys, champion, at cruiserweight. I mean, you got to tip your cap to this guy because you could knock him all the time. Like everyone out there, he's a weight bully. All he does is want to chase Canelo. There's even some critics of Benavidez out there, but you can't knock the fact that he's writing his own story here. And I hope he stays at cruiserweight for a little bit. I hope he fights up a tire because who knows what's going on with Bivol and Better BF.
Yeah, Dan, I agree. I think I'd like to see him stay at cruiserweight as well. I don't think we're going to see him back down to 75 unless Better BF and Bivol call for the fight, which I don't really see them doing. But in that case, if he campaigns at cruiserweight, this is assuming he wins, which it's not a foregone conclusion. This is why we fight the fights, especially after seeing that face off. But yeah, I really like the way Benavidez has moved. He talks like you want your champions to talk. He moves like you want your champions to move. I've had the chance to be around David and interviewed him and his father multiple times. Spoke to his father quite a bit on ProBox TV, and they're just supremely confident in David. They know what they got. They know what he is. That's why they're able to move the way that they move, because they have the utmost confidence in their ability and that they're going to whip everybody's ass. Just put me in the ring with them. I don't care. I don't need to chase anybody. I'll fight the biggest, baddest guy in the room. That's just the mentality that David has.
Did you see that Bivol will be fighting his mandatory on the Usyk-Verhoeven card?
I did see that. Bivol's back. German kid that he's fighting. Bivol is back. Doesn't seem like it's a very dangerous fight, but you never know. Bivol has been out of the ring for a long time.
Coming off back surgery.
He did have a back surgery, which is not great to hear. One of the best fighters in the world coming off of a back surgery in his early 30s. What's with these Russian fighters and getting back injuries? Dmitry Pirog's career ended on a back injury.
That guy was a beast.
Matt Korobov, another one, back injury. These Eastern European Russian fighters and their backs. What the hell is this? Especially with the way they train, they seem so fluid. It's very strange. I just named three Russian fighters who have sustained back injuries during their careers.
It's interesting because Bivol is a guy that depends on the movement. It's like how long can you fight that way? He's still 33, I want to say, which is, you know, teetering on the edge of all right. Like, is he going to have to change his style?
My legs changed when I was 33.
And you had to change.
Yeah. Well, I had a knee surgery, which definitely didn't help. But yeah, I had to change. My style changed completely after that. If you look at me before 30, from 32 on, before earlier and 33 on, it was different.
You had to depend more on sitting down on shots?
Combination punching, more aggressive. I became a front foot fighter. I was coming forward much more.
I feel like Bivol does kind of come forward, but I think it'll be fine. It wasn't like a major back surgery, but it's like it's one of the first like surgeries for him, and he's been out of the ring for a while, and he's been fighting for a long time, been in some big fights. Point is I don't know what's going on with Bivol. Is he going to fight Better BF for a third time, or is he going to move on and try to get Benavidez at 175?
And what's Better BF doing? He hasn't fought since Bivol either, and he's 41 years old. What is he doing?
Not drinking, not smoking, not doing anything like that.
A lot of prayer.
A lot of praying. Who knows? Because he lives like a monk, they said. But he's getting up there.
I hear that.
That's why I was not really super excited to get that third fight, because it's like they're just the story has already been written there. That's why I would, if Benavidez is to go to back down to the light heavyweight, I do want to have him say Bivol. But I like the fact that Benavidez is now a cruiserweight and he has options now. He has formidable options, like lucrative fights, entertaining fights. You tell Opataya versus Benavidez? Banger! That's a multiple titles on the line. Not that we're talking about those, but big fight.
And again, I don't want to look past Zerto because you can't. You got to give Zerto respect. But even watching Opatai the other night with Brandon Glanton, I saw places in that performance that I think Zerto could give him trouble. And I think David Benavidez could give him trouble. And by I mean give him trouble, I mean I could see them beating Opetaia. I think Opetaia is the best cruiserweight in the world, but I got to see those fights. I got to see him beat those guys as well, because I can see where the holes could be, where the opportunities could be for those guys to beat Opetaia. Not saying they will, but I could see how it could happen, which means we got
to. Yeah, I'm trying to find the odds. I know that Benavidez is a favorite. I just don't know how. -300. So not a huge favorite.
Wow. But that's still.
Three to one.
The fact that he's a favorite at all, I think, is wild, because he's coming up. His first fight at cruiserweight. Zerto has been in cruiserweight for a long time. Zerto's very good at cruiserweight. That's interesting.
But I think it's just Benavidez. It just looks so good lately.
Yeah, he's just so
good. I mean, he mugs him.
He's never fought in this weight
class. I
know.
And I guess Zerto, you know, we've seen Zerto lose before. We've seen Zerto have some uninspiring performances, or, you know, outclassed, I should say, by Bivol. But he's the guy, yeah, though, at cruiserweight. That's number two. That's May 2nd on the zone. Also May 2nd, number one. I think you know what number one is, guys. It's Inoue, and it's Nakatani. It's the biggest fight in Japanese boxing history. It's for Undisputed. It's Inoue, the all-time great. It's Nakatani, who everyone wants to see, people have been saying for a while, this is the next Inoue. And Inoue is about to say, not so fast, my friend. This has everything. And this is pure boxing. This is everything you could ask for as a boxing fan.
Two boxers, two punchers, two finishers, two guys who lay it on the line, two Japanese warriors, two guys who are willing to risk life and limb to get the win. This is, like you said, this is everything. This is the most anticipated fight on the calendar for this year. This is huge. It's in the Tokyo Dome in Japan. You got two Japanese fighters. Yeah, you got two undefeated guys, both with, you know, putting their undefeated record on the line. The only tarnish on this fight is Nakatani's last fight.
Have we forgotten about
it, though? His last performance gives you a little bit of, I don't know. Am I as excited as I was before? Maybe a little bit less, but it's still a great fight. And I actually think that last performance is going to help Nakatani. Because if he went out there and blew out some random Mexican guy with a good record, it wouldn't have prepared him for what's going to happen in the ring with Inoue. He's going to be in the lion's den, you know, that night against Inoue. Because Inoue, he doesn't make it easy on anybody. You know, the way that he pours on the pressure, especially when you crack him, you're going to have to learn to dig deep. And I haven't seen Nakatani have to do that. So I think he had to dig deep in that fight. He had to show that he's got some internal fortitude. So I think it's actually going to help him that underwhelming performance happened right before.
Yeah, we're talking about the Sebastian Hernandez fight, which went to distance and left a lot of people wondering, did Nakatani win that fight? Hernandez landed 247 punches. He landed 32% of his power shots, 30% of his total shots. Yeah, we saw some holes in Nakatani's game in that fight. I was wondering was he looking ahead to the Inoue fight? Was it just a bad performance? Are we seeing a little bit of a slide for Nakatani, who's coming up in weight? He began his career much lower than this. He began his career at 104 pounds.
Whoa.
So, and now he's fighting up at, this is at 122. But Nakatani is the tall, rangy, still has a lot of power, and he's 28 years old, and he's in his prime. And the fact that it's both Japanese fighters, and it's just wild. Like, I hope and pray that we can somehow make it to that. It's not looking likely unless something changes, like tonight we buy our tickets. But this is what every boxing is about, man. And with Inoue, are there questions about Inoue? Because I don't think there should be, but there are always going to be questions about a guy that's at the top of the pound-for-pound list or top three. We all know what comes along with Inoue. There's a pro-Inoue camp, and there's an anti-Inoue camp. I can't believe there's still an anti-Inoue camp, but there is.
That's a very small camp.
Very small camp.
That's a very small camp.
It's a camp that I don't want to be a part of. It's not a camp that I'm dying to go to.
The detractors of Inoue are going to say he's not big enough for this weight, and he takes unnecessary risks early in a fight, and his chin
can be jacked. That sounds like a reason why we'd want to watch him.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to be a detractor, like, if you're one of those guys who is like, Crawford is higher on the pound for pound than Inoue. You know, Usyk is higher than pound for pound than Inoue. Bam Rodriguez, Bam, 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 Bam's probably in, higher than him because, you know, he doesn't get hit the way that Inoue does. No, he takes risk. I said that. He's willing to risk his undefeated record to hurt you. His willingness to take these risks are what makes him so exciting. But he does get hit. He does go down. He does get a little... wide's not the word, but he takes really unnecessary risks early in a fight to try and get you out of there quick, to hurt you. So he leaves himself open at times, and at 122, he doesn't take the punches the same way. You know, he took those punches at 18, at 115, and kind of walked through them. Even the great Nonito Donaire broke his orbital, didn't put him down, wasn't like he got hit and was like obviously hurt, broke his face and still just walked through the shots. But at 22, Luis Neri drops him hard. Ramon Cardenas drops him hard. You know, so you rarely see pound-for-pound guys go down like that. So that's where the detractors or the negative Nancys of the Inoue camp, that's where they, that's their fodder.
Yeah, there are, some, like, we are seeing some cracks, but we're also seeing a different Inoue in the last 24 rounds. MJ and Picasso, did he lose a round in that? Maybe one?
Picasso, I mean, both of them potentially won the last round.
Right. So you're seeing a guy that's changed up his game. The Cardenas fight, I think, opened his eyes because he was life and death for those middle rounds. Like, those punches were inches, like whizzing by.
Whizzing.
You were there ringside. Like, that's, it was amazing.
Yes.
And I honestly think that was a wake-up call for him because the next two fights, Picasso and MJ, we're seeing a different Inoue. And it's still beautiful to watch because it's nonstop movement. It's nonstop punching. It's sitting down on shots. But, you know, you have to change your game up. You're 32 years old. And you've been fighting in wars going back to 2012. You can't go in there and go life and death with these guys, especially when you're undersized, like you just said. And they're coming, and you're the number one spot, too. They're coming to take your head off. So I understand why he's come in and changed up his style. If anything, I think it's absolutely impressive that he's able to go in there in 12-0 or 11-1, guys, world-class guys, and make it look easy.
And with MJ, like, that was the guy who was supposed to be the Inoue killer. That was the guy who was supposed to beat Inoue. He was screaming from the rafters, "I want Inoue. That's the guy I'm gonna beat." And yeah, you get almost shut out because that's a sublime skill that Inoue possesses. So yeah, now we're watching greatness in real time with Naoya Inoue. And listen, greatness comes to an end. Every great fighter, you know, has a point of their career where they fall off, unless you're Floyd Mayweather or Crawford. But I don't see Inoue being a guy who's going to aim to be undefeated. I see a guy who's going to risk and take the hardest challenges possible and will likely lose at some point in his career, which is fine. You're allowed to lose, especially when you're risking the way that he is. But yeah, no, he is an absolute all-time
great fighter. After this, it's not many more challenges at 122 unless they try to welcome that Bam fight, which is kind of like a super fight where promoters are really going to push for that. So it'll be interesting to see if Inoue does come out on top. Will he go to 126, another weight class where there are legitimate hard punchers and really tough fights? Inoue is -295 favorite, so almost 3-1. So if you think there's some value with Nakatani, if you don't think that last fight, or if you think that last fight was more of an aberration, because before that Nakatani was, it was a lot of people like, this is the pick. Like, this is the sexy, like, Nakatani is going to beat Inoue. I was hearing that for a while, considering how Inoue looked against Cardenas hitting the canvas, and then Nakatani just steamrolling guys at 118.
I was one of those guys who was saying that I could see how Nakatani can beat Inoue, and I wouldn't be all that surprised. But I'm having a hard time with the things that I saw in the last fight for Nakatani. The lack of variety in his jab. The lack of using the jab as an actual weapon. He's more just masking his power shots. You're not going to be able to do that with Inoue. But styles make fights, too. And I think the way that Hernandez was his opponent, right? The way that Hernandez fought Nakatani was, it's a really tough style to deal with if you don't have an authoritative jab to stop a guy in his tracks. And if the power punching isn't having an effect, you're basically cracking a heavy bag that's coming at you. Nakatani, in a way, is a very different matchup. So you can't really just hold that fight to him. But again, I did see some things, and I think you need a full arsenal to beat a guy like Inoue. Regardless, I still want to see it. I still see how Nakatani could be very successful against Inoue. And in a way, man, one of these times he goes down, he's not going to get up.
That would and be scenes.
That's kind of the reality of what you're seeing when you look at a guy like that, who more and more often is getting dropped.
Nakatani drops Inoue, stops him,
woo!
Or Inoue stops Nakatani.
Crazy.
50,000.
I think this fight could likely end this.
If DraftKings has that up yet. Fight's too far away. No, they just have the line. I'm curious to see that line.
Interesting prop bets on that
one. Yeah, that's May 2nd. So there's a lot of May 2nd. There's some great fights. May 9th, Wardley Dubois. So it's going to really start to pick up. Like April, at the end of the month, we got the Fundor Thurman. And then April is like massive fights. I mean, Fury versus, like big events, I should say. Fury, Makhmudov. We see Ben in the ring. We're all going to be watching that on Netflix. MVP starts their schedule. With all sorts of women's fights on ESPN that we didn't get to. But your list, is there anything missing from your list that wasn't on mine?
Itama and Franklin. Really looking forward to that fight. I think it's a big step up for Itama. Franklin is hot right now. He throws a lot of punches. He's super durable. If Itama goes out there and does what he's been doing to everybody else to Franklin, yikes. That's a real statement. If we get to see more rounds of Itama, and we get to see what he does late in a fight, we get to see what happens when he doesn't just blast through you, we're going to learn. I think we're going to learn a lot, and regardless of how this fight goes down, I think we're going to learn a lot, good, bad, and everything in between about Moses Itama. So I'm very much looking forward to this fight. And also, anytime Itama fights, I'm excited. I want to see. I like
that fight. Yeah, that was supposed to be last month. They moved it to 28th. Itama versus Jermaine Franklin. Willie Hutchinson's on that card, Liam Davies. That's on my honorable mention. Another one that we did not have that I think is going to be a great fight is, why is it now gone out of my head? Callum Smith. Who's Callum Smith fighting? Morrell.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I just saw that one was announced. Hell of a fight. David Morrell, Callum Smith. That's a good fight. Callum Smith is a brutal puncher. He's working with Buddy McGirt. I think he's down here in Florida, actually. They're up in Vero Beach. He's been revitalized working with Buddy. And he's going out there and knocking guys cold. He got that big win over Bouazzi, which is a huge win for him. Kept him afloat. And David Morrell, I don't care if you lost to David Benavidez. I still think you're one of the best fighters in the world. David Morrell is special. So, hell of a fight. Morrell, though... Is the chin going to hold up?
Well,
for Callum Smith, because Callum Smith is a real puncher. Mundo can really punch. Can really
it's a
crack.
Shame because Smith's been out for so long. He fought Bouazzi at the beginning of last year, and which was a fight of the year contender.
That was
yeah, because
long
of
ago,
all
huh?
this nonsense of him waiting for eliminators and the politics of boxing kept him on the sidelines.
Yeah,
he's back now. And Morrell, Morrell is going from Benavidez, his last fight with Khatiev, which was brutal, and now Callum Smith, and he's. Brutal. Under 15 pro fights because he's had the long Cuban amateur career. But that's a murderer's row.
Yeah. And David Morrell just looks like he's happy to be there, man. Doesn't care. Doesn't care. He's very confident. I'll beat anybody. I think he's even said he wants a rematch with Benavidez at some point down the line, which...
He'd have to string together a bunch of wins.
Yeah, which Could. Is... I mean, or these kind of wins. You win fights like this all the time. You beat Callum Smith. You're like, you're right Absolutely. Back in it. But yeah, very, very. I like both these guys. David Morrell, I think, is really, really, really talented. This is an interesting fight that I didn't really have in my mind's eye. And then when it announced, I was like, ooh, that's a fun surprise.
Wilder Chisora, April 4th.
Slopfest.
That's why I didn't have it in my top five.
Big, big, fun.
We'll be
Slopfest. Chisora. We will be, oh, for sure. I'll be cheering. I'll be screwing my head off because Chisora is so fun to watch. And Deontay Wilder is such a character. And that's, it's both their 50th
yeah,
fight, right?
Pretty cool. 100 fights
that's pretty
total
cool.
for them.
That's pretty cool. 100 fights between two.
Yeah. So that's our, it's a good list. I mean, these are exciting fights. These are all compelling fights. They're all somewhat, evenly matched fights. So I know we spent a lot of time on this show in the last couple of episodes going through this big news with everything that's going on the political side of the sport and all that. But I want to remind everyone, like, this is a boxing show, and we love breaking down fights, mm-hmm. and we love watching fights, and there are some good ones. There's a lot of good fights. It's going to really ramp up from here. It's going to be a sprint from now until the end of the year.
And it's been a good start.
A little slow.
It's a full... We're sprint. You think so? I don't think so. We've had some good fights. The Tio Shakur event, that was huge. Granted, the fight wasn't, like, scintillating, but still a big event. Big enough for us to have a pre-fight party.
Party was awesome.
The Murataya versus Andy Lee. Andy Cruz. Great fight. Like, really, really
good
fight.
Another thing, too, is like, the Haneys, the Shakurs, Rolly, Ryan Garcia, who fought Barrios, and that was a big event. Abdullah Mason... a lot of these guys are still going to fight this year. They're not. They don't have any. They have fights that they're rumored. Like, could we see a Rolly and Haney? Could we see a Ryan and Haney? Could we see Abdullah Mason? We're going to see Abdullah Mason defend his title. There's some exciting fights that haven't been scheduled yet. So you throw those in, especially heavyweights too. I mean, we can see Anthony Joshua Fury this year. We're going to see Canelo again this year. Mexico versus the world. We're going to see obviously the fights that we just named. So there's a lot of good things happening in boxing, despite the fact that, you know, the sport's trying to be rewritten in Congress, and we have promoters suing each other, we have promoters stealing fighters, we have all sorts of nonsense. That's fun too. Like, well, don't get me wrong. Well, we will cover that as well. But I wanted to just like take a break for a second, take a deep breath, you know?
Not even taking a break. We're going back to the bread and butter. Going back to the reality of this. This sport is about fighting. It's about boxing, and we got some good fights on the line. And we're talking fights, and it's a good thing. I was going to say something. One of those fights you were talking about piqued my interest. Oh, Lester Martinez returns next week on a Pro Box TV show, fighting Emmanuel Aleem. It's an interim WBC title fight, because Christian Bile, remember, had that awesome fight with Lester last year. Great fight. Draw. And then Christian goes, I don't want to fight you again. I'm going to go fight Canelo Alvarez and make a bag of money. So Lester got left out. So keeping him busy. He fights next week. Huge Guatemalan fan base. And potentially gets the winner of Christian Bile and Canelo. So he could be in the running for the Canelo sweepstakes if Canelo can get past Christian Bile, which I do think he will.
That's another thing, too. I think we're going to get Bile Canelo. I'd be shocked if that's not the case. Yeah. And then, Lester, odd man out. Like, once again, the ugly side of boxing. Fight should have been 12 rounds, number one.
Should have been the co-main event. Should have been 12 rounds. And I think with 12 rounds, Lester gets the win.
That's a tough one. A tough one to swallow. There are big fights. That's the main point of this episode. This could be a big one this summer. Gervonta Davis is rumored to return this summer at 140 pounds versus Pitbull Cruz.
Gervonta Davis out of the driver's seat. Cannot pick and choose who he fights anymore, I don't think. I think he needs a tough fight like this one. Because he said it out loud. I don't want to fight that guy again. That hard-headed guy. I don't want to fight him. Now he comes back off the couch, hasn't fought in over a year, and you're going to go right into a Cruz fight. I think he realizes he needs a big win. He needs a fight that people aren't going to expect. He needs a big showcase kind of event. He can't just fight anybody. He's got to fight somebody dangerous, somebody legit. And now he's in this kind of fight. It's a tough fight.
Picking Cruz over Roach, interesting.
He doesn't want to see Roach.
It's at 140, too. It's not at 135. Roach. This is all rumors, by the way. I mean, this is him going finally to 140, where there are some massive fights for Davis. If he comes back as a full-time fighter, could we potentially see Shakur and Davis at 140, finally?
I don't know if he stays at 40. He's just, Dan, you know Gervonta. He's not a 40-pounder. He's barely a 35-pounder. And I don't care how long he's been off. He's 30 years old. He's not growing. He might be taking the 40 fight because Cruz is not a real 40-pounder either. It's basically two blown-up 35-pounders fighting each other, so you don't have to cut as much weight, and you can go out there, and you've already tangled with the guy for 12 rounds. You know you can outbox him. You did it with one hand. So this is the fight that to come back into. So if he's really about it, trying to fight a Shakur Stevenson type, then he'll probably stay at 40. But if not, if he wants to go back to 35 and try and get his belt back and tussle with those younger guys down there, because he does have world-class power. And, you've got these younger guys who haven't been touched by anybody like him yet. So, I don't know. There's a lot of options for him to come back and where he could place. And in that case, he is in the driver's seat in terms of which weight class and where he wants to go, because there's plenty of opposition for him.
In other news, Clarissa Shields says that she can beat Rolly Romero.
I don't think so.
Why does she do this?
I don't agree.
Why does
it gets likes and it gets clicks? But listen, If you look at the comments, nobody is on board for this. Nobody believes her. Shannon Sharpe literally was like, "I think he knocks you. I think he stops you."
That was actually
on his show. I think he stopped. Shout out to the
that
was very
that
good
show. I forgot the name. Nightcap. They have a lot of boxers on. Last night they had Shakur and Shakur and Rolly. They've had a ton of fighters on there, and you know Ocho Cinco really knows his boxing. Shannon Sharpe is like a, somewhat of a casual. Actually, sat next to Shannon Sharpe in 2007. For Cotto versus Mosley at the Garden, and me and him were going back and forth. That was an awesome fight.
We both landed
the same amount of punches. That was an awesome fight. 2007 at the Garden.
The difference in that fight was Cotto's jab. I couldn't believe he was out jabbing Shane. The speed of Cotto's jab, I was like, "Whoa, what? This guy, this that was a special performance." I remember.
Speaking of HBO, did you know that Tubi streaming platform free? I don't. This is not an ad. They have an HBO boxing channel. Crystal clear.
I do know that.
Great fights. Awesome. Go check that out.
I love Tubi. I watch Miami Vice on there all the time. there's also some of the worst B level 80s horror movies on Tubi. So I've been a big fan of Tubi for a long time.
You can get a lot for there. But back to Shields. You are arguably the best female fighter ever. You have beaten everyone, Olympics. There's really no one dominated. There's everyone. No one on your level. I don't understand why you have to go to this level now. Why do you have to start challenging men or saying you could win? Like, I get all press is good press. I just think it kind of just diminishes her in a way. I just think it's unnecessary. I just think it's just an unnecessary topic. Rolly just dismissed it. He's just like, she's a woman. I'm not going to do that. Like, that's she can think what she wants. I'm just not going to do it. I just don't get it. Like, there's so many other things for her to talk about. Like, talk about fighting other champions. Talk about, I'm the best. Talk about all that. Fighting a man, I get what that means in today's, you throw it on Twitter and it's going to, you know, get a bunch of engagement. But I just feel like it's not something that an all-time great should be entertaining.
Clarissa is an engagement machine. And she's kicked everyone's ass and dominated them so much. She's running out of opposition. So she's calling out men. She's calling out something that's going to get clicks. And it's working. It's everything she does gets eyes. It gets attention. She is under the microscope and she loves it. You know, she does her lives all the time. She talks to the fans. She gets on these shows. She's got her Papoose famous boyfriend. You know, he's got all this drama with love triangles, they have a reality show going on, you know. So it's just part of her brand. And is it what you want to see from an all time great? Is it normal for an all? No, but it doesn't matter. We're in a different era now. So she's just doing what she does, and I respect Rolly for the way he's handling it in terms of being respectful and kind of quiet about it and just shrugging it off. Like no, especially because he knocked out the guy in two rounds that dropped Shields.
Oh, yeah. Then Shields says that he had like nothing in his gloves.
I sparred the kid literally around that same time. He had the same gloves on. There was padding in the gloves. It's a really shameful thing to do is to throw someone and a coach under credibility under a bus by saying that they were not pads in the gloves. And if you look at the combination when they hit each other, they threw left hooks at the same time. His was tighter. It got there first. I don't know why you need to say there's no padding in a glove. He could have been wearing 24-ounce gloves. You land a shot like that, you're going to get put on your back because that's just how boxing works.
Got some boxing this weekend. Kenneth Sims versus Arnold Barboza.
Talked to Arnold yesterday. This is a tough fight. Kenneth Sims can fight. Also, do you notice they're fighting at 47? Both of them are 40-pounders.
Didn't know that.
So they're fighting at 47. Which I think is good. Barboza, I asked him yesterday, I was like, man, how did you ever make 140? He's big. He's really big. And he's coming down from over 200 pounds when he used to play football. But Kenneth Sims can really box. And he's tough. And he's been in tough. This is an interesting fight. Both guys need
big
to win time. Here.
Both coming off of losses.
Yeah. One to Duarte. You know, Kenneth lost to Duarte in a close fight. I believe it was a majority decision. And Barboza lost to Teofimo where he was pretty much shut down. But he also blamed being stale for the fight when I did speak to him. That he said he was in too many camps, back to back, overtrained.
I thought that was a
good
thing.
Body wasn't reacting right. You can get stale though. So and if I wasn't a fighter, I wouldn't like to say something like that. But I called a lot of his fights on the way up under on Top Rank, and he just wasn't getting a shot. He kept calling out Tio. But all that being said, 100% version of Barboza. still may have a lot of trouble with Kenneth Sims. Kenneth Sims could fight.
Duarte barely got past Kenneth Sims. Jazza Dickens puts his WBA 130 title on the line against Anthony Kachache. Fuck.
Kachache, almost. Getting better. Getting better.
This is in Dublin, Ireland. On St.
I don't know much Patrick. About Jazzy.
Well, who is Jazza? No offense to Jazza. When did he win this belt? I was researching. He's got 6 losses. I see him tweet a lot. Like, he tweets a lot. And he was tweeting about, like, some big boxing news that's going to shake up the world, like, implying some Epstein boxing news and, like, weird.
What?
He was stuck in the in Dubai as they were getting just
I heard about that.
Bombs rained down on him. And then he also started a narrative or a discussion on Twitter a few weeks ago about how, you know, boxing broadcasts, it should be all boxers. Like, no, like, guys like me, no guys like Mannix, which I don't agree with, to be honest. But I think we need a little bit of everything. So that's how he got on my radar. But this should be a good one. It's in Dublin, Ireland, and it's on St. Patrick's Day weekend. That's probably going to be an epic scene.
Yeah, and I don't know much about him. I'm not on Twitter, so I don't know any of those things you're saying.
The things that I said about Twitter mean nothing. Because Twitter means nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Twitter is a cesspool.
It's fake life.
But this is an interesting fight. Kakache, know a ton about him. He's on an absolute tear. Knocked out Lee Wood, beat Josh Warrington, knocked out Joe Cordino before that. Like, guy has been on an absolute tear as of late. So, I don't know. I don't know a lot about Dickens, but I know a lot about Kakache, and Kakache can fight. So, I don't know how this one goes. I don't know what to expect.
Great analysis.
But, yeah.
We don't know much about this guy. We don't know the fight's going to go. We do know it's going to be a fun fight. Dublin.
Yeah, I mean, it's two Irish guys, right? Well, Kakache is actually, I think he's Italian, but he fights at Ireland.
Hey, Italians are up right now. We end the show with something very funny. I want to start introducing more videos on the show. It's an untitled segment. If you guys can come up with a segment, I want to find the crazy shit that goes on in this sport and bring it to your attention. Hype FC. Which was, I believe, streaming on PPV.com. It looks like
Hype FC
in Brazil. We have a ring announcer, Walter Walker, who fought in UFC, I was told. Here it is, Chris. Chris is seeing this for the first time. He's the ring announcer, and he's in the ring saying, "Stop this fight because it sucks." Like, this is the middle of the fight. And he's telling them, "I don't like, they're not throwing enough punches. We want to see more." Have you ever seen that in your life, Chris?
Well, does he have a stake in the company? Or is he just the ring announcer?
I didn't do that much research here. I just know that he...
Because think about that. Because if it's your show, and you're like, hey, listen, guys. Because I've seen that. I've been at shows where the head of the organization would jump in and be like, all right, this is
maybe nonsense. He does have a piece of it that would make more sense. But the fact that he's the ring announcer, and he's jumping in the ring and saying, like, this fight sucks, kind of respect it. Kind of love it.
I do too.
Kind of love that. And then what do we have here? Then later on, we have this. The same ring announcer set up a fight between the head of security and a random fan. Same card.
Whoa, this is them right here? This is the head of security
and a fan. I can't figure out which one's the head of security and which one's the fan.
I'm thinking the fan has shorts.
Fan has shorts? Yeah, and he got mad because he started to punch him in the face. Watch right here. He cracks him and he goes, "What the heck?"
This is madness.
Bro, the best part is that Corey Erdman was on the call.
Corey does so many of these like odd jobs just for the love of the game. He'll do anything. He'll call you name it, any kind of fight sport. He's on it, and he knows everything about everybody too. It's pretty amazing. I will say this.
Keep going
to the point where this guy may be, you know, partly involved in the company and stepping in and stopping the fight. I do remember Gary Jonas, CEO of Pro Box TV. I forgot which fight it was or which fighter it was, but it was a relatively known, you know, mid-level guy, but he didn't throw a lot of punches. He made a really ugly fight. He comes screaming at the desk, "Never again. That you tell him that he's not coming on ProBox TV ever again. No runners, no holders. Get him out of here. It was awesome. I'm like, wow. That was one of my first shows on ProBox TV, and I got to see Gary Jonas running around the ring. And for those of you who don't know, Gary is like 6'5", and he's like running, screaming, never again for this guy. Never, no runners, no holders. Get the hell out of here.
Well, we've seen that. Like, I've heard of that before. Like, promoters, like Lou, remember Lou cut Tor a hammer while he was on live during the fight?
I don't remember that. I remember Tor, and I know how volatile Lou can be.
It was a horrible fight, and I think he might have just retired on a stool. And then I think Lou fired him or cut him via Twitter.
Cut him.
Fired him. He cut him via Twitter. Essentially fired him. He cut him Twitter while the fight was still going on.
What boxing is so awesome. I've heard Bob Arum do stuff like that too. Not as publicly.
Imagine
but
Bob
like
going in the ring.
Back, he'd be like, no, like no more.
Imagine Bob going into the ring mid fight.
I bet you wants to. If he was younger, I could see that.
He is younger
because he's, and I just mean physically, because you know, in terms of mentally and psychologically, I think he's meaner now than he used to be. But yeah, if he was younger, I could see him jump out of the ring and be like, nah, you're done. Because that's one thing. Top Rank is ruthless about the way they cut fighters. Like, you can win, you don't win good.
Well, even
out.
Turkey, you know, smaller rings and no running, which took over boxing, big narrative last year. So this is what Turkey wants. Turkey would love to step into the middle of the ring and tell these guys to start fighting. But we got to see it in Hype FC.
He famously went to Shiraz's corner during the Adames fight. And was telling them to step it up, you know, like, yeah, heavy-handed at times. The heads of organizations can be none more than that guy we just watched. That's about as heavy-handed as you could possibly get. No, this fight sucks. Get out of here. Hey, you two out of the crowd, come up in here. Throw on some fake mouthpiece.
Who knows what we'll see next week? I'm gonna keep that segment going. Good episode, Chris. Have a great weekend. You're headed over to a Pro Box event in Kissimmee.
About to jump in the car right now and drive on up.
How far of a drive is that?
3 hours, just under 3 hours.
Nice.
Not too bad.
Get there you go. So there's Pro Box this weekend. There's boxing, all sorts of boxing around the clock. Golden Boy and that Dickens fight. So there's something for everyone. Team USA, World Baseball Classic. Team Italy, drinking espresso. It's best time of the year, in my opinion. March, college basketball, everything is all coming to a head.
I think I'm going to go get some espresso. All this espresso talk is maybe thinking, I got to drive. So, yeah, a little espresso. Do a little,
hey,
little pinky.
Let's go Team Italy.
A little pinky up. Let's go.
There you go. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you next week.